If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. Nikki McDonald, also known as Tapestry Girl, is an Australian needlework artist whose urban pop art portraits use modern street art styles to tell stories of iconic characters that she's created. In the second part of our interview, we talk about how Nikki's work fits within the art ecosystem, her local art scene in Sydney, and she shares a regal fact about a previous job that you are going to love. Be sure to listen to the first part of the interview and check out the whole conversation on the Mr. X Stitch YouTube channel, where you can enjoy stunning visuals of Nikki's work. If you enjoyed the show and you know people who like textile and needlework art, then please tell everybody about it. I'm on a mission to change the way the world thinks about needlecraft, and Needle Exchange is an important part of that journey. The more people that know, the more fun we're going to have making vibrant pieces for people to enjoy. See you next time. How do you manage your time? And yeah, like those things with, you've got an exhibition coming up, you've got so many pieces of work you want to do, you're very aware of how long those pieces take. What's your kind of project management approach?
I guess the last thing you ever want to do is a rush. So I guess I don't ever initiate an exhibition till most of the tapestries are done. So the last thing I could do is ever rush stitching, because they just don't stitch themselves. You know, it's a certain amount of time and a certain amount of sort of gratitude and goes into making it. So I would never put forward the idea, like I'll have a big goal, and I do have lots of big goals that perhaps will have to be realized over time, but I wouldn't say to, I'm represented by a gallery in Sydney, so I wouldn't say to them, I'll have an exhibition in 3 months if I absolutely knew I couldn't. I'm going to be realistic. And I didn't give them a lot of work. And then they rang me just recently and said, have you got much? And I said, oh, actually, I do have a bit. And so I took it in. They went, yeah, there's enough for an exhibition. So I'm part of a big kind of group one. But I can't put that sort of pressure on myself, or I will just, okay. But what I sometimes do is complement the tapestries with big paintings. So or the paintings might inform a little tapestry or a big one. So sometimes if I know I've got 3 months to go and I've got like 8 tapestries or something, but I want to fill the walls, I'll do some nice big paintings that complement. And that can be a nice filler.
Mm. So here's a perfect question for half an hour into the conversation then. How would you describe your style and the medium that you use?
Yeah, well, I think that I've got like a contemporary urban pop, maybe. Not pop art, but urban pop, in the way that I use sort of bright colours and patterning and bring it all together with key black lines. So I don't think I've got any work without that sort of style, the key black lines, bringing it together, which is sort of, I guess, street art style. Banksy uses his key black lines. There's lots of
loads of graffiti artists that you do that, don't you? You put the colour and then the black lines are the things that define the shape and bring it all together. Yeah, that's like straight off the street.
Straight off the street. And what I love is that sort of you can have all that chaos and then the key black lines bring it together. And that's another thing I really like about Needlepoint Tapestry is when you have that spray paint or the digital dot matrix, it looks like the repetition of the stitches. So, again, it's like that print medium, it's the street art medium. Even Walt Disney, if you look at the way that he drew his Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse, he sort of drew the colours and then brought it in together with key black lines. So I'm kind of stuck on that. I don't think I'm going to shift from that, except for when I sort of do some repurposed old tapestries and kind of make them contemporary. I go with the flavor of them, but I think my noticeable work is that sort of key black lines. I really love that. Like, it does something to me when I'm walking along. Like, I went to Melbourne for a holiday and it's really like known for its alleyways and its street art and, you know, has beautiful pieces and then like all the paste ups over the top of it and then more. And it's like this really electric collaboration of somebody puts something on a wall, someone else comes and sticks something, then someone else does this. And in the end, you've got this, like, there's so much vitality in that. And in a way, I want to capture that vitality in this sort of permanent medium, because, you know, you're walking down the alleyways in where it may be London, Melbourne, Sydney, I don't know, anywhere really, and then you walk down a week later and it's different. So either it gets, you know, whitewashed over, or I did hear that Banksy came to Melbourne, put something over, and someone who wasn't in the know whitewashed it over or something. Or, you know, this happens all the time. Like, it's so ephemeral. But when, you know, I would photograph it at these alleyways and use bits and pieces of it, and I think it sort of gives it this permanency, because, you know, needlepoint tapestries last for, you know, hundreds of years, like wool strong, and so it's captured that really vital moment where all these people have, you know, put adrenaline into it, like they've, you know, they've done their bit, and often in the dark because it's maybe not legal, but again, it's got that energy of that. And I don't know if I always capture that sort of so perfectly, but, you know, that's sort of a little bit of a drive to try and get that flavour or get that energy.
Yeah, I sometimes think people don't realise, because it's like a temporal collaborative art project, isn't it? Sometimes two graffiti artists will spend time drawing over each other's work, but a lot of the time it just happens over time, and it's almost like this weird documentary that's going on these streets. And I think the other thing that's interesting, there's another artist called Jacqueline Royal who has a similar approach, in that she's very interested in, you know, the effort that people make, because a lot of the time we just kind of glaze over this stuff, unless you go somewhere where it's deliberately like, these are graffiti streets, you know, Bristol, those kind of places. But a lot of the time, if you see them on underpasses or train bridges or whatever, but that's somebody's art, like, they've taken the time to make that. And so it's almost like it deserves some praise, regardless of what our instinctual feelings are about it. And so then that idea that you've got of, like, converting it into a different format, it gives it the praise it deserves. It makes us consider it in a different direction.
Yeah, I think there's real energy in that, and I think it's really empowering. And I guess I've empowered the female form and done graffiti over and paint, and I love neon lights and, you know, the colours of that, and the, you know, the headlights or the taillights reflecting on people as they're walking down the street, perhaps like, a, you know, across their eyes. Or it's just a really lovely amalgamation of all things urban channeled into to these, you know, to my tapestries. And yeah, I feel like I still have so much more to explore there, even though I've sort of, at first I started just doing the landscape, and then I started putting the landscape into the female form and kind of really enjoyed how that worked. And yeah, I guess I continue doing that. It's sort of like, I guess it sassy, urban, yeah, I mean,
I think as well, sometimes you have the same characters that you've used over time. The girl with the bobbed hair is a particular favourite of mine. But I think what's interesting is the treatment of those characters. I guess it's become more refined over time, or your technique has evolved over time. I wonder if you can sort of speak to that a bit.
Yeah, and it is. I call her Bob Girl, the Urban Explorer, and often if I do, I'll write a little story about what she's done. Like, she's, you know, walking down the street and there's a convertible Mustang with like a Chili Peppers song, you know, coming out, Learn to Fly. And, you know, I create this whole big story around her, and it sort of, it gives her the reason to be down that street or what she's doing. And so again, like, I continually use that sort of template because I put her in different situations, and it depends, I guess, on what count of tapestry. So some of them I've done her in have been 3.75, like a rugging canvas, and then she's kind of chunky and, you know, taking in the colours of the street in a much more sort of chunky way. But then some of them are 10, I never really do anything lower than a 10 count, and so then she's more refined with, you know, she might have graffiti on her arm, or, you know, a tattoo, or, you know, recently I've been just putting butterflies in my work, because I was in one of my kind of breakup with art modes and was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm dead. Like, I've got no ideas. And then I went to an art fair and I was walking along and this girl was speaking to one of the booths, and she goes, oh, well, I'm just re-emerging from COVID. And I went, oh, re-emerging. And that word, it just came to me, and I just saw butterflies and cocoons. So for the last year, I've been putting butterflies in my work because I feel like there was just that time during COVID. I made so much, and I was having in those 3 years, or I had three big exhibitions all kind of mapped out, and every one of them went online. And the last one, which I thought was going to be okay because Sydney was fine, and then there was a flare-up and it all locked down again, and I was like, oh, I can't do this, you know, because the online, it's fine, and in fact, I don't even love going to a big exhibition opening or anything, but it was just quite tedious being in lockdown, and I did not love, like, I couldn't access a lot of creativity, and I was sort of making, so I'd drawn them all up, and then the exhibitions kept doing that. And then I heard this word re-emerge, and it just lit me up. And so most of my work in the last year has had a butterfly somewhere in it, just to symbolise that re-emerging. And since I heard that word, I've been on. I've been making and excited, and, you know, the butterfly is going to, like, fly off soon and then be the next thing. But I guess Bob Girl, I like to keep putting her in new places, and I like that she has been a constant because it shows the journey, the different backgrounds, you know, the butterfly here, or I did geckos for a while, and she had geckos sort of there because I'd read how sociable they were, and how if there were too many females, one would turn into a male or vice versa. And I thought, how lovely for, you know, our, you know, the diversity. And I just thought it was just a great little symbol, you know, to have someone who that was so friendly chirped away on the ceiling and could be so LGBTQI plus A, you know.
They're both very transformative animals. I think the thing with butterflies is it's such, you know, caterpillar soup butterfly. It's such a transformative thing. And, you know, it still twists my melanin a little bit that we've got probably about 85% the same DNA as those guys. So you think, wow, we should be able to just, I don't know, I should be able to change my eating habits if they can change their entire form or something. I think it serves as a very hopeful icon, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I'll do that. I latch on to things. I might latch on to even like there was a lot of graffiti around that had a crown. So I was putting this sort of graffiti crown on people and things. And I just, it becomes like a little sort of anchor throughout my work for a year or a year and a half or something. And then next, you know, I'm on to the next thing. But there is definitely a strong flavor in my work where people will go, oh, that's identifiable as like, whether it be, you know, Tapestry Girl, which again is sort of like Bob Girl. I like that sort of character nature of it. Tapestry Girl can probably be a bit more playful and curious than perhaps Nicki McDonald might be. You know, I can sort of extend myself. I can go on Instagram as Tapestry Girl and maybe be a little bit more vocal or a little bit more showy, or, oh, I'm going to put this on as I go and put all the nice places, because that's the Tapestry Girl kind of character, you know, and Bob Girl's kind of friends with Tapestry Girl. So it's a little bit kind of playful and, you know, I can have fun with that rather than sort of get serious and go, oh, have I posted too much? Oh, have I done this? You know, as you know, because social media is something to navigate and to balance out, but having more of a character sort of thing, I can take more risks.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, obviously, I'm Mr. X Stitch and he's hilarious, whereas Jamie Chalmers is very quite dull. But I was having the same conversation with Danielle Clough, fiancée Knowles, and the same thing there, you know. Yes. She got her nickname from back when she used to be a VJ, but she still uses it now as a tool because, like you say, it gives us a bit of extra oomph. I think it, and to me as well, I think it's quite a useful tool because if things go well, if you become a bit viral or if you become a bit famous, being able to switch that personality off is quite good for your soul. You know, I often say about, you know, I'd go and do a workshop at a festival somewhere and everyone would be like, oh, you're marvellous. And I'd sit back down in the car and I'd phone my wife and then she'd be like, right, this is the stuff we need from the supermarket. And you come back down to earth. And I think if you're your own brand, it's quite hard to negotiate that. Whereas if you can turn Tapestry Girl off and I can turn Mr. X Stitch off, it does, it's a useful tool, isn't it?
Yeah, I really like it. I think I really love fiancée Knowles, and I've been to one of her workshops when she came to Sydney, or, you know, and we talk a lot on Instagram. I mean, I think she's fantastic, as are so many people on Instagram. They are so inspirational, and, you know, I get so excited to like meet new people, and that's, you know, you showcase so many people. Everyone that you've done a podcast for this, I've followed straight away and looked at their work, and, you know, and there's so much great support in the textile world. I think everybody's really eager to help, and, you know, having you're introducing people in your blogs and, you know, the podcasts, and there's Textile Curator who, you know, does 100 100 in a month,
100 days,
you know, and I'm just learning all the time, what are the different expressions, what are people trying to express? But yeah, I really love that. I think we've really hit a great medium. I mean, I'm sure if you're a potter, you go, oh, yeah, I've hit a great medium too, you know, and there's that. But it's so diverse and so great, you know. I love, like, artists coming out of South Africa, you know, Europe, America, UK, you know, and each one of them really stands so in their own space and really, expresses so differently through textiles. Do you know Hannah Lee T?
Mm-hmm.
And she does photographs and then she does the rubber and she stitches in that. She's in South Africa and I'm just in awe of her work. I go, how did someone come up with that? And, you know, all around the world, you know, there's just wonderful artists and all with most of them with an Instagram handle sort of. So again, that sort of maybe being in character so they can, you know, have that vulnerability, take risks and express their artwork through Instagram again without having to maybe be exactly themselves where, you know, it is a vulnerable place to be, the social media, I think.
I always remember the first time, I think we featured Hannah Lee on the blog quite a few years ago, but she sort of made like telephones with teeth and all these like 3D sculptures and made out of rubber. And you're like, how strong must her hands be in order to be able to do that? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But I think one of the curious things, I think that textile artists champion one another because textile artists still understand that we've got this weird uphill struggle against like the art establishment. Now you include paint and other media in your work. So it's almost like in some ways that gives people a shortcut to accepting the work, I'd imagine. But I mean, how do you find the way your work fits within a broader artistic context?
Yeah, I do think that it's a lot. Well, I must say a lot of people are, oh, my grandmother used to do that. Or, you know, it's a real paradigm shift. I'll say things like, you know, it's great because it absorbs sound, it doesn't reflect light because the way that, you know, I don't put glass on my work, but I'm trying to sell the medium, whereas I just think just let it sell itself sort of thing. But, you know, I do think my paintings sell often more quickly than the tapestries do. That I think they're like a slow burn, like a lot, you know, I've sold quite a lot over the time. Like, you know, I don't have many left in my house. Like what I make often in the end, it might take 5 years, but, you know, they'll often go. But I do think it's a paradigm shift and people getting used to it. We've got the Archibald Prize runs in the New South Wales Gallery, and it's a really big art prize. And this year's winner used textiles, actually used jeans, and it was fabric, and it was stitched, and she won, and I was just so excited. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the exhibition, there was about 4 significant pieces that were textiles, and I think that there really is a shift towards new materials, new points of expression. And I think textiles is really high up in that. And I'm really, I'm so happy to see it because I've got lots, you know, lots of ideas. I would love to get into like one of those sort of big end prizes with a textiles piece for, you know, for many reasons, selfish just because I could do it. But, you know, as the hero being textiles and, you know, lifting the perception of it, just getting people more and more used to it. You know, I often say a canvas is woven textiles. So people are painting on textiles. It's woven. Like if you look at the, you know, it's all primed and everything, but the back of it is, you know, it's woven material. So really, like it's, those paintings are actually the basis is textiles. So so there's already a good start.
I feel at some point, I don't know, it's such a weird one, is it? Because I've had conversations with people where we just want to go, it's just art. Like we shouldn't even have to call it textile art, you know? It's the same way as saying, you know, I'm a guy that does cross-stitch. I should just be able to say I'm a person that does cross-stitch and for none of the other labels to really matter. But I guess that remains the situation. But as you say, you know, there's so many people that are doing such exciting things. And even with the humble needlepoint and the humble cross stitch, you know, there's still new directions being created left, right and centre. It's quite fascinating to see. The other thing I wanted to ask you actually was, when you started out, I think a lot of your backgrounds were fairly literal interpretations of like the urban environment, you know, with like posters being stuck on it. And then I was thinking about, I don't know whether you would have seen it, but the Spider-Man Across the Spideyverse, like animated film that came out, which is absolutely stellar in terms of animation. But one of the things that was interesting there was when they did like scenes in the distance, they just kind of used blobs. They didn't, there was a certain point where they could go, we don't need to have literal looking things anymore because the brain will fill in the gaps. And I feel like that's something that you're doing with your work, is like pushing at where you can afford to go abstract and yet still communicate what you're trying to get across.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, because, and sometimes the bigger I go, I'll spray paint my whole big, like 5-count needlepoint canvas. I pin it up at home, like in the garage, it's like way bigger than me. Like I've got one sort of 2 meters high, and I'd get the spray can, I'd do the big colors and, you know, big expressions of the urban environment. And then I'll have drawn my key black lines, and then I'll data project them and hand paint them in. So it's giving the suggestion of the background being urban, but then the foreground, it's all brought together with those key black lines. And then maybe a you know, the butterfly tattoo, or the, as I was saying, the gecko, to bring in that kind of clarity again. But yeah, the brush strokes, I think, you know, I've been working with a bit of fluoro lately, and I saw some fluoro wool, like nice hot pink and, you know, fluoro yellow, and they just really make those sort of backgrounds pop because of the like the neon lights. I love neon lights, and I've seen a few artists that put it in their work, and that's the next thing. I'd love to be able to design some neon lights to go with the tapestries. It'd be really good. Again, you know, I've got quite a massive day job, and I carve out as much time as I can, but I'm really looking forward to sort of minimizing that again at some stage and pursuing more of my goals, because I've got quite a few bodies of work in the escrow or in the background, or, you know, just waiting to just pounce and really make that, realize that, and make that sort of happen. Like, I feel like at the moment I'm kind of at half pace because, you know, I'm sort of filling in for a head teacher that left, but I've been filling in for 2.5 years. I never really planned to do the big high-end job. So at some stage I'm going to, like, you know, handball this to someone else and give myself, you know, work 4 days a week and really give myself that time to realize a few of the big ideas that, you know, when I say big ideas, I mean big pieces that really showcase, you know, different ideas. I'm working on a series at the moment slowly, and I'm quite enjoying that. And I think you would probably quite like it. I've gotten from deceased estates all these, you know, very old needlepoint tapestries and pulled them out of their frames, and they're like old Australiana or different landscapes. And then we had, went in the 80s and the 70s, I think, really strong pub rock bands like AC/DC and the Angels and the Saints, and they've got these sort of lyrics, and I'm putting the lyrics on top of the like hand sewing them or putting felt or whatever on top of these very old needlepoint tapestries, because it really works. Like, these pub rock songs are singing about that, and it recontextualizes them, but kind of then spotlights the lyrics out of these songs and sort of shows that paradox of these kind of hard-hitting songs, but what the tapestries that were on, you know, your grandparents' wall at the same time. So I love these sort of recontextualizing these sort of old traditional things and then marrying them up with something a bit edgy. So that's a body of work that I'm pursuing. And then I want to find a pub that used to have all the, you know, the rock bands that's now sort of got gentrified or whatever they've done, and then have my exhibition in a pub with all those sort of lyrics and the old tapestries that have been brought back to life again, given them sort of new hope, really.
It's quite funny as well, because what you're doing there is you're having a temporal conversation. Like we were talking about before with the graffiti in the streets, you're doing the same thing. You're taking elements across time and merging them together to create something new.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love that. Yeah, I guess that's recontextualizing and making, that kind of celebrating that urban voice, landscape, attitude, and yeah, marrying it with those sort of more softer images, I guess.
But it's also, there's also like a folk tale thing, you know, because I think a lot of the traditional needle points were based on art of the past. You know, there was a certain time when people just did very, I don't know, floral scenes or whatever. You know, there was a sort of romantic approach, and those are kind of like stories that were told in the past. And then when you get your AC/DCs or you get your punk movement, you know, those are modern folk tales at that point in time. So it's almost like those layers again. And now in the same way as you're doing with your art, you're telling tales, you're like reflecting back on folk tales and pulling them together and going, this is how I process. This is my understanding of the tales that have been told to me over time.
No, you're so right. In fact, you've actually validated even more. Like, I love the idea that it's storytelling, and that's really what it is. That I've got one that's the potato pickers from, you know, I think it was an impressionist thing, but it looks so Australian with these two people with their potatoes in their hand, and it just gone so well with a Hilltop Hood song, you know, should have had some land, some money in my hand, but I got nothing. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a kind of a bit of a hip-hoppy Australian sort of thing, but it just goes so well. I go, it's almost like the film clip for it, but there was that story and here's this modern story, and it just works really well. So that sort of, there's lots of those under my bed, and I pull them out and I stitch them, and then that, you know, so that's sort of a work that's going to happen that is running alongside some of the really big lights and brights and urban sort of things. So as I think I said, if I'm going somewhere it needs to be little, I'll pull one of those out. But if I'm going somewhere where I can take a big piece, then I'll take the big one. But it's kind of nice doing, I guess, two bodies of work at the same time. So
that gets you out of that love-hate cycle, doesn't it? Because you can switch between two different loves, like flirting with two different people at the same time, I guess.
Yeah, and they're quite different. I'll look forward to, I mean, it's just taken forever, this like 2-meter-high cross-stitch. It's got paint on the back of it, so you can, I'm exposing that and I'm loving it, but I keep looking at it and it's daunting. So I'll roll it up and put it aside, and then I'll get it back out, and then I'll get the other one. So it's actually helping me to get the big one done. I keep looking and going, why did I think I could do something so big? But when it's done, I think it'll be magnificent. It's going to be just a labour of love, that one.
Of course, the other thing will be interesting is when you get to do this exhibition in the pub, whether you do indeed spray something on the side of the pub and possibly have some kind of chain link fences in front of it for a large-scale needlepoint off of that sort of thing. Hot diggity.
Yes. Yes, I love that idea. I love to create a feeling. So when people come in, they get that feeling. So maybe it can start outside and then you go in. And it's like a bit like back in the day that people used to have happening. So you'd go in and you'd get a feeling. I was during the lockdown, there was a little break, I think, around the June, July, and I had an exhibition and it was in a room, and of course everyone had to wear masks, but it was a full red room, and I used the Chili Peppers, There's a Light On, and I had the lyrics, and most of my tapestries, they were titled by different sort of lyrics that were sort of uplifting. And my whole idea was you came out of the street, you know, that everyone was in sort of a bit COVID-y mode, and you came into this room and you just, there was a shift. You know, I just wanted people to immerse in this sort of red room. There is a light on, and then, and you know, get an earworm because you read the title of something. I think I did one from Fleetwood Mac, like lay me down in the tall grass sort of thing. And so if you're prone to earworms, you could not have left that exhibition without some song going on. And I quite like that immersive, you know, all senses. I had a big bowl of lollies, so, you know, that sense was sort of satisfied. Massive. It was a salon hang. So, you know, most of the room was hung with pieces, and then there was the red walls in between, and there was music on, and then there was the titles with the earworm, and I did have some big fluffy pieces that I encouraged for touching. So it was that whole immersive thing. So I'm hoping, if you know, with the pub one, I can have that immersive, almost going back to the 80s when you'd go to a pub and maybe a sticky carpet floor and, you know, there is, again, the song lyrics to, you know, possibly evoke earworms.
Yeah, this is the land that Tapestry Girl lives in.
Do you have
in, right?
Earworms in England?
I've got an earworm right now, yeah, thanks very much. I've got a song from Encanto that I woke up with and immediately popped back into my head. Encanto is very strong in our house at the moment.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I love a good earworm.
Yeah, I don't mind them for like the first week or so. I remember once I had, you know, Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, I love that.
I had the song, Brett, You've Got It Going On, for about 3 weeks every day. I wanted to actually drill a hole in my head. For some reason, that just stuck.
Oh, my
in
God.
Hard. Yeah, that was true.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I'll just get them. I'll wake up with one and then I'll just beat through all day and I'll be like, oh, come on.
Yeah, it's when I don't mind. I'll have one for a day. When they go like 3 days, you're like, okay, please, there's got to be. And I don't know what the science is of how you can replace one earworm with another. Do you really have to go back to like We Don't Talk About Bruno for a reset point? I'm not sure quite how it all works.
Yeah. I don't know either. There's definitely some research could be done there. What is with these earworms and where do they come from? How do they go if you don't want it anymore?
It's a good segue actually into my my very specific questions in that case then, because first of all, do you listen to music when you're working? I feel like you probably do. Oh, well, actually not all the time.
Not all the time. I'm very much a podcast audiobook person and I really love audiobooks. I used to read a book a week before I was, you know, so fervently into sewing, and now I've swapped that to audiobooks and I'm in a book club and I'll try to read most of the book, but it ends up being audio because you just can't do everything, can you? You can't be sewing and working and doing all the things and reading. So music I love, and on the weekends, lots of music. I'm a music fan. Sometimes it just needs to be quiet, particularly if I've been teaching all day. And, you know, there's a lot of noise. There's 1,500 people in that building, so there's just energy. So I walk a lot. I walk after work to clear my brain so I can get back and then just get into some artwork and things like that. But I love music. I love now how we have all that streaming. I mean, you know, back in the day we'd, you know, get our, like, album and, you know, play the A-side and flip it and, you know, or our cassette or, you know, whatever. But now it's just, you know, it's a smorgasbord. You know, I've got playlists for everything. I've got playlists for cleaning the house. I've got playlists for all that. So, you know, it's a really different place that we live in, isn't it? Like, I can't imagine getting an album and listening all the way through and then listening, you know, I'll pull that song and that song and then I'll combine that with that and all that sort of thing.
It's quite funny. I've got a record player, so I guess I've gone vinyl to some extent. Like, I like to listen to mixes. I always like to listen to stuff I haven't really heard before. It's interesting when you do put records on, because some just don't really hold well. You know, it's when you get certain albums, like Fleetwood Mac, like Rumours by Fleetwood Mac, you can listen to that one side, turn it over, listen to the other side, Happy Days. You know, some pieces are really complete because they've been thought out that way, whereas the more modern stuff is a bit kind of disparate. And you do, you're like, you listen to a couple of songs you like and you move on. I do quite like getting compilations. Over here, we've got a series called Now That's What I Call Music, which has been going since like I was like a teenager. So you can get the early ones of those on album, and that's quite good in a way, because then it's just like a compilation vinyl, you know, you can just put that on and listen to it. But does Tapestry Girl have different musical tastes to Nicki McDonald?
She might do. She might be more focused in on the songs to as the titles to the... I think Tapestry Girl likes all those old songs and, like, you know, I like really from the vault, like even, you know, as I was saying, the Chili Peppers and Nirvana, because I pull the titles out and they're such good, strong titles and they really kind of marry up well. And, yeah, Nicki McDonald does love music, but really podcasts and all. I love information. I love sitting there listening to things and hearing what other people are doing. And
so what's your favourite podcast at the moment then?
Oh, yours by far.
Oh, that is the right answer. Thank you very much.
You've got...
I'll give you a tenner later.
You've got like... Well, I've listened to four now. You've got four on, haven't you? Or is it? Yeah. I've listened to all four.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So putting that aside, you. Obviously. Any other good podcasts?
I've been listening to some just good creativity. I have been listening to some nice, good nutrition ones. I'm a bit addicted to that Dr. Gundry, just listening to him. He's got a real salesman voice. Mainly just different people talking about creativity, and I don't just flick through or, I don't know. I'm also big on audiobooks, and I've been listening to, I don't know if you, what did I listen to? Lessons in Chemistry. There's it's a book that was just out this year by Bonnie Garmless, I think, and very strong female lead, and really enjoyed her. Listen to The Rules of Civility by Amor Towles, who did he did The Gentleman in Moscow. Okay. Anyway, I'm just loving that sort of, like, lots of strong female characters doing really empowering things.
And do you enjoy listening to fiction books rather than non-fiction books?
Oh, pretty even out. Like, I really like philosophy books too, just on the way things happen, the way behavior, sort of the way people think. And I like a good story. I don't like anything scary. I don't like too much tension. I'm such a visual person that as soon as I read, see, or hear anything scary, I don't want to stay home alone at night. I've got too much of a vivid imagination, so it's all got to be kind of nice, happy endings, you know, that sort of thing.
I've asked the podcast question to a couple of people, and both of them, Fiance and Meredith Woolnow, both said, the Ologies podcast, which I've now downloaded a couple of episodes of. So each episode looks at an ology. The one I've downloaded, it's a two-part thing, but it's about emojis, and I think they call it curio-ology or something, because it's about visual language. But they have all these different, you know, and then they get an expert on that field, whether it's mushrooms or vampires or whatever. But it's one of those ones where suddenly after 2 hours you become a micro expert on a subject, and then you can bore your friends with it or whatever. So that sounds like that might float your boat a bit.
I'll definitely look that up.
Do you have a favorite album then? I know Chili Peppers is pretty strong.
No, well, that's because I've had all the titles in my, because they just kind of worked for that. But, you know, when I was sort of growing up, I loved all the English bands. I loved all the punk stuff, then all the New Romantics. I loved Boy George. I loved all that. And then, you know, moved through that, all that. But one, you know, constant thing in my life was Leonard Cohen. My mum used to play it when I was young, and she'd sort of sing and, you know, love the way he does Hallelujah. And so I guess Leonard Cohen has stood the test of time. He's really poetic. He's quite edgy. He did an album, Songs of Love and Hate, and there we have the paradox.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll choose Leonard Cohen, I think, as my favourite. I mean, there's just so much choice, but I'm going to put him down as someone who's just stood the test of time, someone I know nearly every word of, and I just have deep respect for him.
Because I'm not massively familiar with him, but is his work quite urban?
Well, he was quite, he was slightly, I think he had a tortured sort of sensibility. I think he's quite urban.
I mean,
he's not urban funky. He's like, I think he's a storyteller.
Yeah, but telling tales of like cities rather than telling tales of the countryside, for the sake of argument.
Yeah. And heartbreak. Lots of heartbreak. You know what songs are like. You know, So Long, Marianne. And like, you know, you can see he's really quite tortured.
Yeah.
But he's good, you know. I like him.
It goes really well with the vibrant colours that you're stitching at the same time.
I know. See, paradox. I keep saying to myself, how am I like this? And I'm not that into star signs, but I'm going to say because I'm a Gemini. And, you know, I've got the twins.
You feel very balanced.
Good. That's good.
Do you have a favourite film?
Well, I think, again, it can't be anything horrific. So I like fun films. And, again, it's like the over the time. Like I loved Grease and Blues Brothers and Saturday Night Fever and anything that's sort of fun and that you can just enjoy. I love that Crazy Stupid Love that was out recently. I think anything Emma Stone's in does, you know, she's really good. We have Margot Robbie in Australia who does all the amazing things. She's just done Barbie. Whatever she touches has turned to gold. So is it going to be really bad if I don't have a favourite film?
Because there's no right answer here.
Because... you know, I barely got, because you just can't stitch in a film theatre.
That's true.
Like how, it's all dark. And I sit there and go, that was 3 hours where I just lost stitching time. But, you know, unless I had a little head torch and was doing this.
Do you have?
Yeah, I don't go to the movies that often.
To that point, do you have a favourite outdoor space for stitching them?
Oh, yeah. I just love forests and trees and the beach. I've got in Australia, I don't know if we've got these cool cabana things and you set them up and it's like a little tent on four legs and you put the sand in there so they don't blow away. It's like a much better umbrella. And my friends and I, we go down to the beach and set them up and, you know, I bring the sewing and I love that. And then when it's hot, going to, you know, for a swim and coming back and I just love it. Or I love travelling out to, the greater west. You know, you go up over the Blue Mountains and out and it's just beautiful. The sunsets are stunning and it's always natural environments. I love getting all comfy and just the environment, beautiful, just fills my soul with happiness. And there I am not wasting a minute because I'm stitching away and making something.
See, man, it's so nice talking to you because you're so sort of chilled. It sounds a bit daft. This might sound daft, but obviously looking at your Instagram, Tapestry Girl, lots of fun and action, but you're much calmer and more considered than I was expecting.
Yeah, I guess it's I guess that's a lot of the reason I even do tapestry, because I'm not extroverted. I feel like I'm contentedly introvert. You know, I spend time with, you know, sewing and with headphones and walking and like with, you know, close friends and things like that. And I guess that does balance me. But, even like I was a bit nervous to do the podcast. You know, I had to get my computer and set it up and make sure, you know, everything was going to be okay. And so I do,
No,
it's
I think
like a contented sort of.
I think me and my wife have realized that we're both sort of comfortable introverts, or maybe it's just that we're generally irritated by other people. But either way, we realize that we just quite like hanging out with ourselves. Thanks very much.
Yeah, I think you probably are a bit more extroverted than I would be. Maybe. I think you shine, you know, and you like to put a lot out there. I do hide behind my artwork quite a lot.
Mine's just veneer. It's just all pretend stuff. I got one more question for you then. I was going to say, what's the most interesting thing that nobody really knows about you then?
Okay, so I do have one I think that's kind of funny and interesting. So when I left uni, I worked at a television station at Channel 7, and I did that for nearly 10 years, because I had my teaching, but I didn't cash that in. I knew that was for later. But I worked on like Home and Away and Country Practice, and I did all the sets and the props, and I'd go out to Summer Bay and I'd do, you know, it was my show. You know, I worked on it. I loved it. But I also then worked on another show called Rafferty's Rules, which was about a local magistrate that was working in Manly in Sydney. And in one of the episodes, they had the Queen. And the Queen was coming to Australia and she was driving in her Rolls Royce around Manly. And the Queen, the actor, never turned up. So they dressed me up as the Queen and little kind of hat and like all the outfit and in a Rolls Royce. And I drove around Manly just doing the Queen's wave out of the window for about 3 hours while they got all the shots and all that sort of stuff. And so I think that's pretty funny that I happened to be the Queen for about 3 hours. But it was great working in telly. So many funny experiences. Again, that behind the scenes, making it sort of, you know, the getting all the sets right, getting all the props right, getting, you know, yeah, it was a really, really good job, but I couldn't sustain that and parent and do art and all that sort of stuff.
Because I always remember, I think I saw where there is the documentary when Friends ended or something, but there was always a thing just about, you know, Friends is just a set, but the amount of crap in Monica's flat that they had to put in exactly the right place every time they rebuilt the set. Is that the kind of territory that you're talking about?
Yes, continuity. So, like, I don't know if you've watched Home and Away. I know it's on in England and that, but they have this Summer Bay and it's just, you know, it's at Palm Beach. It's a surf club. But we had all these panels and they were all in the right, you know, they would be all stored and taken out in a truck and you put all the panels up and put all the props out and everything had to be just all the same. Or, you know, on the set you'd even like, if like one of the Pippa was cutting a leg of lamb or something, you'd have to have 4 legs of lamb because if she didn't cut it right and serve it, you know, next one in. Or on the beach, you know, the main characters would be walking along, you know, in some form of romantic dialogue with an ice cream. But the ice cream was mashed potato on top because, you know, so it didn't melt. Or there'd be like a big spread of food and it'd all have to be fly sprayed because, you know, it's Sydney, Australia, and, of course, the flies are going to come. So all fly sprayed. So they had to pretend to eat it. And, you know, lots of pretense, lots of fun.
Is it quite hard to unsee that now? You know, if you watch another TV program, do you find yourself picking out the details in the background?
But I can barely watch TV. It's the story arc and all the smoke and the mirrors and all that sort of thing. Yeah. It's like I can see it all.
That's so good.
Yeah, that was sort of back before, but I think it's funny. I don't think about that too much now because I'm so entrenched in teaching and my artwork and, you know, life.
I might periodically call you Your Majesty now, if that's all right.
Yeah, please do. No, Tapestry Girl, Your Majesty. But, I think that I was actually only just thinking about that recently and I thought, God, that was like a funny thing to do, drive around Manly in a Rolls Royce doing the Queen's wave.
Do you now default to that wave just from time to time? It's a sort of, it's in the wrist, isn't the wave or something?
I think so. One time I was working on Home and Away and the characters were up the top, but I was down the bottom, and they wanted seagulls to be up on the balcony. So I'm down the bottom throwing hot chips in the air, looking like a mad person as people are walking by thinking, because all the crew was up on the balcony. It was only me down the bottom throwing chips up in the air to hopefully have seagulls get in the background of the shot.
Do the people in the area, do they get used to it because you're filming in the same place like fairly regularly?
And now it's really popular. I haven't worked on it for years, but now they've got little bus tours out to the different locations to see where they are, and because it's really popular now, that show.
I mean, there was a real halcyon moment for me because Neighbours and Home and Away were both on around the same time. Maybe one was after the other on two different channels or whatever. So definitely I was like with Home and Away probably for like the first 5 years, something like that. And then it gets in the way. I used to wake up at uni and turn the telly on and Neighbours would start, like the lunchtime version of it or whatever. It's very important. And everybody's got their, like, my wife's 8 years younger than me, so her important Neighbours people are very different to my important Neighbours people, which is always quite funny as well. It's like different.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I know. They're moments in time, aren't they?
They are, yeah. If people want to find out more about you, if they want to follow your work, if they want to buy your work, where should they go?
Well, I reckon Instagram's my most active, and that's tapestry.girl. But I do have a website, which is just Tapestry Girl. I guess they're the best points of call. I find Facebook's a bit tricky. Like, I've got the Facebook and I do all that, but it's not nearly as succinct for me as Instagram is. Like, I kind of feel like I've got some ownership over what I'm doing. When I do Facebook, it ends up here or there. Or I don't know. So Instagram and the Tapestry Girl.
Do you think we'll see you on TikTok anytime soon?
Yeah, I know you're on it.
For a second, God help us.
I saw that, but yeah. I don't know. It's that sort of like, can I learn all these new things? Is the TikTok going to be superseded? And do I in the next thing? And then I'll have to learn that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if I know anything about you, Nikki, I think you need to keep it as analog as possible. Keep sitting in a forest, stitching urban, because it's what makes it magnificent.
I think so. It's going to probably make the output sort of a bit more pure.
Hey, Nikki.
Yeah.
Thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been really, really good. I've really enjoyed like exploring all the different things and remembering past events. And and I really want to say I appreciate how easy you made it to sort of chitter chat away.
That's a relief. Thank you. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.